some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Whiskey's. Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio. How are you guys? It's May 4th, 2010. I'm Jimmy Carbone, your host. We're on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com, an association of New York City beer bars, is our sponsor tonight. I'm here with my co-host, Ray Dieter, from DBA Bars in New York, Williamsburg, and New Orleans. How you doing, Ray?
Hey, Jimmy, man. How you doing?
Good, buddy. We got some good beers in front of us tonight, as always.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drinking right now a Goose Island Sophie. That's a small production beer from Goose Island.
And this is not released yet, is it?
Is it? Is that true?
That's what I understand.
Interesting. Our other guests tonight are Chris Kuzme and Mary Isett from the New York City Degustation Advisory Team. How are you doing, Mary? How are you doing, Chris?
Great.
Fantastic.
Good. Mary and Chris are good friends of mine. They started the New York City Degustation Advisory Team a few years ago. They were doing bacon, beer, cheese, chocolate, beer, cheese, and chocolate tastings. One time a beer and ice cream tasting.
Yeah.
All at Jimmy's 43. And they're taking a little hiatus, and they're back. And that's why they're here on our show. So tell us about the New York City Degustation Advisory Team. So, tell us how you started it and your plans for the future.
Well, it started, I think, in late 2006, early 2007, where individually we were both holding our own beer and food pairing kind of groups. She had a food meetup, beer and food meetup group. We met at the New York City Homebrewers Guild while we were both doing these things separately. The first pairing I did was at your establishment, Jimmy, and it was just like a bunch of us in the back with a lot of your different beers and a bunch of chocolate, and you know, kind of going for it and learning a lot on the spot.
They were really popular. I mean, you'd have 40 people at a time coming in for, you know, beer, cheese, chocolate. I think one time we tried to do just beer and cheese or bacon and beer without the cheese and chocolate. People got really upset.
It's more fun with that third factor, I think. It adds a different element. It spins everything else out of order, and you can think about it in different ways by having things in different order.
Great. How are you tonight, Mary?
Good.
So how did you ever get involved in the world of beer? And it seems to be that now, like Yankee Brew News and some of the other beer publications,
Ale Street,
they're trying to, and Ale Street News, which you write for,
right,
are trying to write more about women and beer.
Right.
Tell us a little bit how you got in the world of beer, because you're a very interesting person. You're very knowledgeable.
How did I get in the world of beer? I guess I have always loved craft beer since I was in college, and my father is really into craft beer, so he would always call me when he was visiting a brew pub and, you know, tell me what he was drinking. We always talked about beer. So I got more into it. I started homebrewing. I studied for the beer judge certification exam, got my certification, became president of a Brooklyn Beer Society, and then got the Ale Street News gig.
That's great.
So
what's the Brooklyn Beer Society that you were president of?
Malted Barley Appreciation Society, which Chris is currently the president of.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
Proud
I am.
We have royalty.
Proud
here.
I am.
Wow.
It's royalty.
Sure did.
It's like meeting of the presidents.
So how did that group ever get started, and how did you get involved in it?
Well, I think the New York City Homebrew Guild was started first, and then the Malted Barley kind of split off from that. And there is actually right now in New York City, I don't know, in part, I guess, because of the kind of urban
sprawl
farmstead movement, or you know, people are interested in making their own beer and making their own cheese and everything. Yeah, there's actually several new homebrew groups that have started in Brooklyn, a couple new in Brooklyn, a lot more places. We have our first homebrew shop in New York City for a long, long time.
Where is that at?
And they started the Brooklyn Rot homebrew or like a fermentation club,
yeah,
in Brooklyn, which should be really cool.
Yeah, which means tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. Where's the homebrew shop?
The Brooklyn homebrew shop is located in kind of the Gowanus area. It's on 8th Street and 3rd Avenue.
Yep. Well,
and then we also have the Brooklyn Brew Shop, which I think you guys had on last week.
Is that what it's called, the Brooklyn Brew Shop?
Wait, there's two. There's Brooklyn Brew Shop, which is at the Flea, and they have they do one wonderful 1 gallon homebrew kits. So it's really...
So they're online. It's brooklynbrewshop.com.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And they're really... It's a great way for people to get to start brewing in very small apartments. And then Brooklyn Homebrew Shop is a full-service homebrew shop.
Yeah, last year at the Good Beer at BAM, an event sponsored by Edible Brooklyn,
which
and,
was fantastic.
Yeah, which the Good Brew Seal was also a co-host of. That's it was funny because we had the Brooklyn Brew Shop and the Brooklyn Homebrew at the same event. Mm-hmm. But we wish them luck. And one thing that's coming out of this is so many talented people are in the world of homebrew right now. There must be over 700,000 homebrewers in the United States. The beers that I'm tasting from some of the award-winning homebrewers are better than what I'm getting in a lot of cases from commercial brewers. So, you know, we've got an expert panel here, Chris Cousby and Mary Isett. We're drinking a... So Goose Island is a brewery in Chicago. You consider that a regional brewery. It has some affiliation with Anheuser-Busch. The brewer is Greg Hall. He's a really interesting guy. So let's put our homebrew experts to the test. Would you consider their limited production Sophie, a Belgian-style ale from Goose Island, would you consider this on par with some of the better homebrews you've had? Or do you think the homebrews are better than what the commercial brewers are making?
I think those are general statements that I cannot say yes or no to either one. But I think this beer is very well made, and you know, there's as a beer judge, there are no noticeable off flavors that I would like really get down on somebody for. There's a little bit of tartness and that I think is intentional, mm-hmm. little sourness from it. I mean, and I know that's one of Greg Hall's philosophies is you know, sour is the new hops. And he's really going with that, and it's cool.
So, do you know that. Greg Hall?
I do know Greg Hall. He's a great guy. Really.
How long
really
has he been making beer?
I don't know. I can't get that far, but all his life, I'm pretty sure.
And I've known him for about 12 years through DBA when he started coming around a long time ago, before the Anheuser-Busch affiliation. He's a great guy, very passionate about beer, yeah. mm-hmm. and I know a lot of people that consider the Goose Island IPA as one of the great standard bearers of the IPA, of U.S. IPAs.
It's an English yeah. style IPA.
It is English IPA. Style, yeah, but it's got that American, it's got that little bit of grapefruit juice in yeah. it, you know, it's there, that lychee thing's happening,
yep.
but it's not overstated like some of the West Coast things, and it's not understated like some of the East Coast things. I think it's a great beer, really well balanced.
Yeah. So tell us more about Greg Hall. Did he start Goose Island?
Yeah, I don't know him that
with
well.
With his father.
With his father, with that's his right, father. Yeah.
With John Hall. Yep.
You probably know more, John Hall, the musician?
I should know that, right? I don't know more about that. I just know they're together and they still work together.
He comes to New York City a couple of times every year, and he'd always stop in. We'd always have a great time having a beer. He'd bring in new things just to check out, like we have right here in front of us. I think this is a great example of a Belgian-style wit beer. Mm-hmm. It's great when you have a short-run beer of a major... corporate style like a Hoegaarden or a Kira that you see around you know, Blanche de Bruges and stuff like that. They're all fine examples of that style, but when you have like a small run, they can use better quality ingredients, you know, better spices, and this is a great example of it. I wish it was going to be available around the summertime.
So is Greg Hall from Goose Island, that's kind of a American craft beer success story, would you say that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, somebody told me a long time ago that a lot of the homebrewers become brew pub owners, and then they become regional brewers, and then they wait around for a major brewery to come and buy them out and they get the big payday. And I thought that was going to happen with Greg, but somehow he's managed to make an agreement with those big guys to keep the integrity, and they're basically distributing the beer in a really great way.
He's still able to
the
have
beer
fun
is still good,
creating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was just at Goose Island during the Craft Brewers Conference, and they had a beautiful food and beer event, mm-hmm. at the brewery itself, and the amount of barrels they have all along the walls. I mean, it was just an incredible environment to be with, and they had a lot of beers that I haven't seen and you probably won't see in New York for a good right. while until they finish their whole push.
Well, that Bourbon County,
yeah,
was really
Bourbon
nice. Stout. Yeah, the stout was very nice. But I think that's a real, it's like a fine line to walk when you start dancing with the big corporate boys to be able to maintain that integrity. I know Miller bought out the Cellus Brewery, or became partners with Cellus right. a number of years ago, and all of a sudden Cellus just dried up. A lot yeah. of times the distributors, the big guys buy out the little guys, and all of a sudden they evaporate. But I think that Goose Island somehow managed to really mitigate that problem, and they're still around making great beer.
Cellus was a big inspiration for a lot of people, like Rob Todd from Allagash.
Absolutely,
that was
yeah.
like, you know, that was the beer that kind of...
Pierre Cellus. Shout
yeah.
out to Pierre Cellus.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the great brewers. I mean, brought back Hoegaarden after the brewery burned down in the 60s, and just brought the whole Belgian wit beer style back to us, which is one of the great summertime beers. Great little guy. He's a wonderful man. I've gotten to know him.
Oh, I also, I think Goose Island's great because they're a very, very versatile brewery. They do basic styles like English-style IPA, but then they can also do a wonderful, like Matilda's one of my favorite Goose Island beers. Then I've had a number of small kind of one-offs that Greg brought to New York City for special events. He did a fantastic array of saisons. So I think that's one thing that's fantastic because a lot of times, you know, a brewery kind of has limited, they can do limited styles very well, but Goose Island, I think, can do a number of styles from all over the world very well.
One thing I like is I like the fact that they're someone that started kind of small and they became a regional brewer and they are on a larger scale, but they're still trying to be part of the craft beer movement. They're also trying to work more with restaurants. I know that with the Sophie and the Matilda, they really want to do more food and beer pairings. And I see there's a lot of really good restaurants that have only craft beer right now. You can go to some great restaurants like Resto or Cook Shop or Gramercy Tavern. And they only have good beers. And sometimes they actually put some of the bars to shame.
Gramercy Tavern's doing a great job. Oh, yeah. They have a great
staff. I mean, there's some bars where you go in and, you know, it seems like now that there must be over several hundred. I know there's 200 bars in the city at least that have 6 point. And there must be several hundred beers that, or maybe 1,000, that at least have a couple decent pours on draft. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, most bars depend on booze and they've still got their cheap beers. And you go into the restaurants, so I think they're the exception. I think the good restaurants have already embraced the craft beer movement. And, you know, there's restaurants, like I said, Resto has like only Omegang and Duval, and, you know, there's others that only have 6 point. And
things have changed dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, which they're is the great. Leaders right now. It's almost like you can go to a good restaurant and get a good beer, and some bars you can't.
Yep.
So bars, you better wake up.
There was a time when, you know, if you were looking for a good beer, maybe if you were lucky, you'd find a pint of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. But now that's become a boring beer almost. Not that it's a bad beer, but it's so present in all the bars that people are looking for more interesting things. More.
I think that's the danger with getting mass distribution and getting this. Like, I think it's great that Goose Island is dealing with the distributor that they're dealing with, but...
Also, I think with Sierra Nevada, they were just having one or two things out there. Now they're starting to come out with specialty runs, which is really good for them because, okay, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, great beer, really well made, very consistent, love it. And they are now coming out with cask ales. They're coming out with all these seasonal things, and they're doing a great job.
As long as you keep that fun, then there's no danger of really having that kind of thing happen.
Keep mixing it up.
And they're a state ale, which is interesting because all the ingredients are grown on premise.
I also love the ESB they had, the early spring beer, I think it stood for ESB. And I love that.
And the Glissade Bach, I thought it was.
The Glissade is beautiful.
Yeah, Sierra's doing a great job, despite, you know, how ubiquitous they've become everywhere. You can see their beers. But they're mixing it up, and it's great.
Ray, I have a big question for you.
Uh-oh.
It's big and small.
Okay.
Do you think that New York City could use and could handle and support more small craft breweries?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I would love to see more local stuff in this town. I'd like to see more good local stuff in this town. The stuff that's been coming out recently has been fantastic. But for years, there was a lot of little breweries going on, and they weren't making great stuff, I'll be honest. But now, with 6 Point, with Kelso... those guys have really stepped up. Brooklyn, of course, has always been there. I think that sometimes a lot of times Brooklyn Brewery is underrated. They're kind of they're so everywhere that people kind of dismiss them a bit. But Garrett's making some great stuff, especially the Brewmasters series.
Yeah. They've really come back.
Really good stuff.
One thing I'll say is we are open to having a lot more small breweries in the New York area. I know that our friend Chris Kuzme, and his other friends Chris Post and Alex Hall, you're working on Wandering Star Brewery up in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts.
There's definitely room for more small breweries. Right now, we're drinking a beer that is from Leelanau Brewery. We've heard about it a lot the last few weeks on Beer Sessions Radio. It's made by the brewer of Jolly Pumpkin in Michigan. And I just got some in at Jimmy's Number 43 today for the strong beer tasting. And I want to taste this. My first time tasting Leelanau. And what style of beer is this? Does it say anything on the label?
Yeah, it's a it's called Petoskey Pale Ale. It's ale aged in oak barrels.
Little sour finish. It has a Jolly Pumpkin-esque.
Well, they will be sour. Flavor. I haven't tasted it yet.
Yeah. Ray, do you know what's the difference between Leelanau and Jolly Pumpkin? Because we're talking real small breweries.
I don't know.
No, does anyone know?
Did you say it was brewed by Ron Jeffries from?
Ron Jeffries
is brewing, but I think he owns Jolly Pumpkin, but he brews at Leelanau. It's an interesting beer. For those of you out there, you can check it out at places like Thrifty Beverage in Brooklyn.
This is really good.
I'm sure that New Beer on Christie Street in Manhattan also has it, and we're serving it tonight, Jimmy's number 43. Let's step away for a minute. We're going to take a few minutes break, enjoy the music, and we'll be back with Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. How are you guys? This is May 4th, 2010, Jimmy Carboni with Ray Dieter here. Our special guests tonight, Chris Kuzmi and Mary Izett from the New York City Dega Station Advisory Team. Well, this is my favorite part of the show. We have call-in and email questions every week. And we got an email from Tracy, somewhere in the New York City area. We've had call-ins and emails from Westchester, Long Island, New Jersey, and from Florida. So Tracy's from the New York City area. Her question's about growlers. So this is our good team for this, our experienced bartender, Ray, and our homebrew and beer expert team, Mary and Chris. Question is, how long can a growler last? Is there any way to extend the life of beer in a growler? Mary? I bet you have a lot to say about this because you're the scientist type person. What's going on?
Well, I'm not an expert on growlers, but so first of all, I'd say that, that can be answered in two ways. A, is it open? How long after a growler's been opened, or just how long if it hasn't been opened? So I'd say most growlers, once you open them, you should drink them within a day because they're not designed to keep the carbonation going. And growlers can be fill different ways. There's a pressurized system that, like, for instance, Beercraft uses in Brooklyn, or just straight from the tap. And then I think, actually, I've had a growler that that somebody had brought from California and I think had kept in their fridge for, like, 5 months or something, and it was still carbonated and still good. So I think if you have a growler that's been filled properly and was kept at, you know, in cool temperatures.
So certain places like Beercraft in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. they have a special fill, so it goes right from the draft to the growler.
Yeah, and they have a special pressurized system.
They purge it, so yeah. They fill it with CO2. CO2 is heavier than oxygen, so it'll stay on the you know.
Explain that. So it's not just the CO2 that's been put into the beer from a draft system. They actually add additional CO2.
Right, they'll add additional CO2
as a blanket, or it's actually in the liquid.
Well, to purge
as a blanket.
Yeah, to purge the oxygen. Right.
Right.
They'll
put the CO2 in first and get the oxygen to get out of there because CO2.
So CO2 blanket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that means that the headroom between the top of the liquid and the cap of the growler is filled with CO2, not oxygen.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Right.
So what you're saying is that if you want to get a growler of beer,
right.
you don't just want to go to any bar and have them fill up a growler with your beer.
No, I think that's okay. I mean,
it's okay.
I think growlers are fantastic. You know, if you look at environmental impact, if you want a local beer, you want to be the most environmentally sensitive beer drinker there is. The best way is to drink local and drink it on draft. So you're going to a party, you want to bring something with you. A growler is great, and there are so many places around New York City that fill growlers, bars, beer stores. It's fantastic.
How does it work?
And you get fresh beer.
What do they do? You know. They just pour it from the tap right into the growler, or do they have a special hose? Or?
I think usually there's some kind of special hose. I mean, Beercraft has a special system, but like most bars will fill growlers just from their tap system, which is fine. I mean, if you're, you know, you go get your growler and you're going to a party that night, you want to share good beer with your friends, that's great.
And the beer keeps for a day or two.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, if you're bringing good good local beer, it's not going to last that long anyway.
The question is maybe not with a specialized system,
right?
But for getting a growler from your average bar or, mm-hmm. or retail shop, how long will it keep?
It.
Yeah, without opening, how long do you think it'll keep?
I guess it would depend on the fill, like how much headspace. But I mean, I've had a growler that was stored. Somebody kept it in their fridge for like 5 months, and I don't think it was filled in any special way. So I think there's a lot of variables.
What kind
alcohol
of beer was it? I think that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Well, this was actually a very sour beer.
So yeah, I mean, definitely the amount of hops.
So sour is the hops. So a real sour beer, or a super hoppy beer.
Yeah. So where does the word growler come from? Anybody know that?
Oh, I've read
good
that
question,
story, but
right?
I don't remember.
Thanks, Jimmy.
No, because I know, I guess back in the day, people used to get, would go to their bar and get buckets of beer and carry them
right.
home.
That
and
was,
the growler kind of originated out of that.
Right.
So.
There's that great scene in the movie with, what was the movie called? The Al Capone movie where the little girl had the pail of beer and it blows up the bar. The Untouchables.
Mm.
But that was a tradition. You'd send your kids out to the bar, and they would fill up the bucket with beer, and they bring it home.
Yep.
But growler, where does that come from?
Growler.
That's a question. Maybe somebody in the audience knows the answer to that question.
If you have an answer
maybe
to that question,
maybe we can go both ways with this.
You're going to get a free T-shirt from Beer Sessions Radio. So
very
you can
good.
Call us in. In fact, we do have a call-in number, and we're welcome to have you call in. It's 718-497-2128. 718-497-2128. Or email us at beersessions@gmail.com. Well, thank you so much, Tracy. We appreciate all types of email and call-in questions. And we have some special guests who just walked in. I'm really happy to see a couple breweries represented here. We have Spencer Niebuhr from the Southampton Public House and A.J. Baglioli from Trogues Brewing Company in Pennsylvania. Welcome, guys. It's great to have some brewers and brewers reps turn out to the Beer Sessions Radio. We really are about finding the best in craft beer, best beer bars, best restaurants that serve beer, and growing movement of best homebrewers. So, AJ, how are you?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me. Welcome.
Good. So you work for the Trogues Brewing Company.
That's right.
Well, why don't you tell us a little about where you're based and the origins of Trogues, and so our listeners can learn more about your beers.
Sure. Well, we're a brewery out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It's about a 3-hour drive west of here in Brooklyn. We're a small family brewery started by the two Trogues brothers in 1997. A little bit about us. Chris Trogner, one of the Trogues brothers, learned how to brew at the University of Sunderland in the UK. John learned at UC Davis and also at the Siebel Institute in Chicago, which we know are two of the preeminent brewing schools in the country. So pretty much the University of Sunderland really gave Chris a background in bitters, milds, porters, and stouts, kind of the very classic British beers. John learned, a very different style with the American style, very cutting edge. So we use that to our advantage, depending on ingredients or flavors that we want. We really try and capture the old world and new world style.
That's great. Well, and what are some of the beers I should look for from Trogues?
Well, our number one seller is called the Hopback. It's an amber ale with a little bit of hops. The Hopback is a name that comes from a traditional British brewing vessel. We pack the vessel full of whole flower hops. We run the wort through it. And it's essentially kind of like dry hopping, but it's much more efficient. So you really capture that aroma and that depth of character with the hop back. So that's our flagship beer. And then we range everything from a summer pilsner to a winter Belgian ale. We do a porter in the fall. We do a double IPA in the late winter. So we kind of run the spectrum.
You know, one of my favorite Trogues beers is called Dreamweaver.
Mm.
Do you still make that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's like it's a wheat beer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a traditional
kind of suited for summer wheat beer.
Yep. It's a traditional German style Hefeweizen. That's one where we use all German ingredients. We tried to be, very traditional with that style. And just like all our beers, the Dreamweaver, we tried to have a lot of flavor, but we didn't want to be too over aggressive in any category.
Ray, do you ever serve any Trogues beers at
Hell
TV?
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite Trogues beers?
You do a Belgian wheat beer too, don't you?
Well, the Dreamweaver is our wheat beer. Yeah, it's a German style.
Right. I think that's fantastic. Mm. And I believe I had some casks of yours too.
Yes.
And they've been pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And I always prefer the English style casks, like you were speaking before, than like the, I mean, once again, I'm not a hophead. Mm. I'm just not. But I really do appreciate, like, if you're doing a cask ale, to have like a more traditional style cask ale. But you're doing great work. You're close enough to be local, and you're just doing a great job with this stuff.
Mm, thank you.
Well, I have a question for you. I'm interested in learning about how beers from other states come to New York. Mm-hmm. I mean, New York is like the center of the Northeast. We get beers from Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, everywhere, and New York. somehow it seems that Pennsylvania beers have to make this big jump in our mind.
Yeah, my understanding is that Pennsylvania is basically a clusterfuck of laws.
Yeah, there are some pretty complicated distribution and brewing laws in Pennsylvania that you kind of have to work yourself around. In terms of coming to New York, as Frank Sinatra said, if you could make it here, you could make it anywhere. So any brewery that comes into New York really needs the mindset where we need enough volume to supply, you know, the immense demand that New York will carry. We want to make sure that we have plenty of volume for if anybody wants our beer, we want to be able to get it out there. And then, you know, also proper representation to make sure that everybody knows what our beers are like. But as you guys know, it's a very cutthroat market. All breweries around the country kind of come here to succeed. And so there's a lot of demand in terms of a lot of options with craft beer. So pretty much if you want to come to New York, you really have to commit a lot of resources and you have to make sure that your brewery is ready to do it.
Did you bring any beers for us?
Yes, we
AJ?
Did.
Yeah, what did you bring us?
Well, I brought us the Hopback, which I was explaining before, the Amber Ale. And the Java Head, which is our coffee stout, which is a new beer that we have going on year-round. So we're going to taste the Hopback, which is 6% alcohol and has all American ingredients.
I like Trogs beers.
Yeah.
I think that it's definitely hard to come into New York City market. Do you have a large presence in Philadelphia?
Yeah, we have a very large presence in Philadelphia. Like I said, we started in 1997. So we've been in Philadelphia since about 1999, so a little bit over 10 years. So it's in many ways like our home, our backyard market, even though it is about an hour and a half from Harrisburg. So we do really phenomenal there. For example, we're in Citizens Bank Ballpark where the Philadelphia Phillies play. In general, Philadelphia is an unbelievable drinking town. Their Philly Craft Beer Week is insane. So yeah, we've been doing really well there. We've only been in New York for 2 years, so it's a little bit more of an uphill battle. And we're still, you know, making a name for ourselves in terms of recognition here.
I've got a good friend down in Philadelphia who has a few bars, Tom Peters.
Mm-hmm.
And he has Monk's Cafe.
Yeah.
And he's got about three or four other places down there.
Yeah.
Notting Head Brewing.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Yeah. And they're great people. And the beer is amazing. The food's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing thing. I remember one time I was talking with Michael Jackson. And he didn't like New York City. He loved to come to New York City to eat and drink and hang out, but he loved Philadelphia because it was a beer town. He said in New York City there was too much going on to be specific. When he would go to a smaller town, that was a great place to have a beer festival or a beer tasting because that was what was happening that night.
Mm-hmm.
But New York City there's a lot of conflicting things going on.
So AJ, we're going to take a trip to Philadelphia in 2 weeks, okay? And Chris and Ray and I, we're going to go down. And I've never been to Philadelphia since I've been of drinking age.
Mm-hmm.
Should we do a remote?
Where should I go? We could do where should I go to find beer and the better beer bars? What are some of the bars that I should go to?
Well, obviously, Notting Hill Brewery is unbelievable. They're actually really close friends with the Trogs Brewers. So we go back a ways with the Notting Hill people. I would definitely suggest visiting them. Also, I would suggest the Manayunk Brew Pub, which is a little bit up the river, just barely north of Philadelphia. They do some really cool beers, have an excellent outdoor patio. My favorite place is Standard Tap and the Grey Lodge, which are fantastic bars. They do cask festivals and stuff. There's really no end. I mean, there's so much good stuff to see out there. You guys are going to have a great time.
So if we ask you for recommendations and introductions, we can go down to Philly and have a good time?
Yeah, absolutely, right. Without a doubt.
Now, I've heard so much. The Philly Craft Beer Week is next week, right?
Actually,
no, it's in June.
Yeah, it's
in
June.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I believe it starts around June 10th or 9th,
right.
Something like that.
And are you really active in that?
Yeah. We do about two events a day. We do happy hours. We do pint glass giveaways. And then there's a number of casks fests that go on. Also, definitely hit up Yards Brewery.
Right.
Great
stuff.
Fantastic. Yeah, they do a lot of, they do really good British style stuff, but then they also do a good American styles. And they'll probably be distributing up to New York, you know, in the next year or so. Probably. I mean, they've been expanding nicely. And obviously, Philly's only 2 hours away. So I wouldn't be surprised if we started seeing
I've had some Yards beers at my bar.
Cool. So good. Philly Craft Beer Week in June.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take another break. We'll be back in a few minutes with Beer Sessions Radio. Thank you.
All my way. I'm much obliged for such a pleasant stay. But now it's time for me to go. The autumn moonlight's my way. But now I smell the rain, and with it came, and it's heading my way. Sometimes I grow so tired.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carbone, your host tonight. Our co-host is Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com, Association of New York City Beer Bars, is our sponsor. Well, we're sitting here at Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We're in the backyard in a little shipping container that's also known as Heritage Radio Network. There's over 20 shows right now. It's a growing network. We heard there's 150,000 people that through a month listen to us or see us online in some way, iTunes or download us or whatever. And when we do the show, one of the cool things is that the keywords like names of breweries, experiences, expressions, and websites, they get keyed in by the producer, Jack Inslee. So you can come and check up on what we're talking about. We're talking about Philly Beer Week and Trogues Brewery. And our other special guest is Spencer Niebuhr from the Southampton Public House. How are you, Spencer?
What's up, boys?
All right.
How are things?
Well, we were big fans of Southampton. I've been serving the Beer to Mars at Jimmy's number 43.
And you're rocking it.
Yeah. And Phil Markowski is the brewer, the owner?
Phil, not the owner, no. The owner is some Irish brothers from Queens. Back in 96, they started it up. Phil is the brewmaster, legendary, big Phil.
One of the best brewers in America, I have to say.
Yeah. Phil, I went through Phil 101. About 7 years ago.
You know, he's humble. He will come and visit your bar all by himself. He'll walk in, say hello, and take the time to talk to you. Doesn't have an entourage and, you know, public relations experts like some guys do. So if you want to meet a real brewer, you got to meet Phil Markowski from Southampton Public House.
Yeah, definitely.
Ray, how long have you known Phil Markowski?
Oh, man, Phil and I have been friends for years and years and years. We had a great time a couple of years ago, about, I don't know, 10.
Isn't there a Mexico trip?
Yeah. Phil and I went to Mexico.
Can we hear that story, Ray?
I rented a Ford Mustang convertible in Arizona. We were both at a craft brewers convention, and we both were speaking at it. And after it was finished, Phil and I decided we're going to go to Mexico. And so I rented this beautiful car, and just before I signed the papers, it said, "You can't go to Mexico in this car." And I thought that's why I was renting this car, so I could go to Mexico and drive around in the really cool convertible. But I couldn't bring it to Mexico. So we drove down and parked it in a Burger King parking
lot. Why couldn't you bring it to Mexico?
Because it would negate the entire contract. Basically, if we crossed the border, we bought the car. Because they assumed that the gringos coming across the border in the hot white Ford Mustang, basically we're like 15 minutes into the state, into the country, and it would be taken from us. I didn't think that was going to happen. But anyway, we paid $5 and parked it in a Burger King parking lot, crossed the border on foot, and proceeded to drink every Mexican beer we could find. Had a great time.
All three of them.
Yeah.
No.
I loved them.
I got to tell you something. Here's a secret. You know Dos Equis? What does that stand for? What does it mean? Dos Equis. Two X's, right? There's a 1X. There's a 3X. Uh-huh. There is.
from the same brewery or from different breweries?
The same brewery. No, the same brewery. The X Brewery. And now we found there was a bunch of beers. They weren't great. We had a great time, though. Phil's a really... We had such a fun time blasting around in that convertible. And that's... Yeah, I had a tequila story. They confiscated all my tequila. I went to this shop to buy tequila, and they said, you know... I asked them, how much tequila can I bring across the border? And they said, as much as you want. So I bought like a half a dozen bottles. And I got to the border, and the guy said, where are you going with all that tequila? And I said, home. And they said, well, it's against the law to bring all the tequila home. And I said, well, what can I bring? And they said one bottle.
What?
So you're only allowed to carry one bottle across the border.
I think that was before NAFTA.
Maybe before NAFTA.
Free trade.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Spencer, let's pretend you're Phil Murkowski.
I'd really rather.
We love Phil. So tell us about the brewery operation there. Is it actually a brew pub as well?
Absolutely, yeah.
Where is it located?
In the Hamptons. So right in the heart of Southampton Village. It's great. More than 100-year-old inn, and it used to be this place called Herb McCarthy's for like 50 years. And So when these guys started in 96, you know, in Southampton Village, like I said, some Irish brothers from Queens, you know, started to just knock down a few walls on this legendary spot in Southampton. And most certainly people in the village were kind of up in arms. Years after, they really embraced it. And so, knocked down a bunch of walls, threw in a bunch of little fermenters. And so you're talking about, 16-barrel system.
So when did they start? Were they always just a brew pub? And when did they start selling to other places like New York City?
We always started in New York City. I think about less than a year after, we always had bars that were more beer forward. And again, if we're going back to 96, you didn't really find a lot of people, a lot of bars. We were talking about this before. I overheard you guys talking about how the restaurants are more beer forward now. It wasn't always the case, more than a decade ago. So we had a lot of good accounts, and of course they were small. And then we just started growing. I mean, people started to really take to craft beer, and of course local craft beer. I think right now it's about as hot as it's ever been. Right? You would say that's probably the case. So we pump out just a ton of different styles. Of course, we have our double white. That's what we're most noted for. Big Belgian wit beer at around 6.6, and that thing is a creeper.
I've had that. It's a great beer. Well, this beer we're drinking, it's a Southampton Public House Keller Pils, unfiltered varietal hot pilsner.
Absolutely.
This is a really good beer. I've never had it before.
Brand spanking new. You guys literally are the first ones to try it.
So can we order this and sell it at Jimmy's number 43?
Yes, we'll allow it this time, Jim.
How about a DBA?
Sorry, Ray.
This is just in time for summer. We're talking about the Trogs Dreamweaver and the Southampton Keller Pils. They'll be two of my summer beers this year.
Nice. Yeah, it's beauty. It's tradition, which is a lot of, you see all these hops out there right now, certainly Pacific Northwest.
I got to say, this killer beer would be great on a boat.
Yeah. All right. Point well taken, right?
Do you still do these like summer cruise
beer? We do these cruises? Summer sails out of the North Cove Marina in Lower Manhattan. And we do feature some good beer on that trip, and
this is one of them.
I'm looking forward to featuring the Southampton products on our sales.
Absolutely
right. So the summer. Let's rush through this. Let's open a couple more of the Southampton beers. This was fun for me. Other than the Double Wit and the Beard of Mars and maybe another, I've never really tried that many Southampton beers.
Really?
Well, there's so many beers in the city, and sometimes we forget our good friends who are in the backyard.
There you go. And but you got to come out to the Hamptons, though. It's beautiful. Summertime.
I'll try some of that Saison.
We'll get Ray's boat all the way out there. Right, Ray?
If it's not my
boat. We'll get Ray's friend's boat all the way out there.
Is it easy to take a trip out there? We come out and visit you. The pub is public house is open all the time?
Well, absolutely, yeah. 7 days a week. But is it easy? Yes, it's easy if you enjoy traffic. But no, it's not that bad. Everyone complains about
it. We can stay over at your place?
Absolutely.
Do you live out there or do you live in the city?
I absolutely live out there. All you singles out there, pool, jacuzzi.
Well, I do know that our good friends at Edible Brooklyn, Edible Manhattan, Edible East End, St. Publishers, they're big fans of Southampton. They did a really great article in the fall. It showed Phil Murkowski harvesting fresh hops.
Yeah, that was really awesome. Once a year, we've been doing this for about 3 years now, and there's a gentleman, John Mangieri, up on the North Fork in Laurel. It's a small little farm, but this guy rocks. He makes room for us at his farm. And again, not a huge farm, but makes room for us with the hops there available. And he does two different varietals, and we're just really not sure what they are. But they're awesome. Yeah, it's so tough. No, I'm talking about varietal. What type? We think there's a Cascade and quite possibly a Centennial. But
so do you make that into a fresh hop beer?
Yep. Once a year.
Which beer is that?
That's the Long Island Fresh Hop or North Fork Fresh Hop.
Does that come to New York City?
Not much.
Will it come this year?
For you, Ray, yes. For you, Jimmy, no. It's tough because...
I'll take the Keller pill. It's really hot here in this shipping container in the backyard of Roberta's.
I hear there's going to be an air conditioner next week.
I meant to talk about that briefly. It's burning up in here. It's like 110, and we're just mowing
it's
down.
It's funny,
beers.
When we sat down talking about alcohol strength, I said, I just want something light and refreshing. He said, is 7.2 enough for you or 8.5? And I'm drinking the Sassone right now, and it's really nice. Yeah. It's light and drinkable, but in this hot climate, it's too strong for me. I want the Keller Pils.
Yeah. Want it back.
So we need some air conditioning here.
That Keller Pils is very good.
Yeah,
that's awesome, one of my favorite styles of beer.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It's also got a really charming label. I mean, these are little things. It's a charming label of this pub, and it looks like, is this the Southampton Public House on the label? It's a really quaint little house with a patio, and it's got some hops around the border. It's one of the more interesting and friendly labels I've seen in a long time.
I believe Phil Markowski drew that because he's also a great artist, and he's a great golf pro.
Yep.
And a private pilot as well.
Yeah,
he's an amazing man, Renaissance man.
Right, it's true, and he's also the guy on the label pushing the bike, which you also don't know.
I think I want us to give another shout out to Phil Markowski. I mean, we've met him a few times. I know he's a frequent guest at the New York City Homebrewers.
He can fly too, I believe.
Personally, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's Peter Pan.
He's got the power.
He might be listening.
I hope he is. But honestly, it was about
he's
a month
magic
ago,
man.
And it was like early afternoon, and there's this dude with a plaid hat sitting at the bar, Jimmy's 43.
Awesome.
By himself, really quiet and humble, and I'm like, hi. And he's like, Phil Markowski, Southampton. I was like, this guy is cool. Isn't that his entourage of salesmen and PR reps? And, some of these guys fly high, but Phil, he's a humble man. He's still there harvesting the fresh hops when they come out, and he's making the beer, and we're going to give him a big shout-out. We love him. Let's switch to we have another email question. We have a lot of listeners out there, which is really cool, and we love you guys. And if you call in, we'll give you a Beer Sessions Radio T-shirt, so you can call in as well. This is about cooking with beer. Any tips for cooking with beer from Sean McMahon in Hoboken? My grandmother used to make Guinness steaks, but I don't know how she did it. I'm going to lead off with this because I've been a cook in among my many hats. What I used to do with a steak, I used to cook with wine, and eventually I switched from wine to cooking with beer. I would saute a steak, and in the same pan put in some onions, take out the steak, and maybe a little butter, and something like a Guinness or a stout, reduce it slightly, and then pour that over as a sauce. To me, that's what's called a pan sauce. Mm. You can do that with wine or beer. I don't know if you guys ever had any other experience cooking steaks with beer. Spencer?
Yeah, actually, once caught our chef at the public house, right? So we have our grain bags downstairs, and he was sitting down there taking out malt and actually milling it. And so he actually took the malt for you homebrewers out there, literally took the malt and ground it up, and then bit of water, and then just continued to boil that. And so for that was his glaze, and he actually had two different malts at the time. And we didn't like it because it was Marisana, which we didn't really, in a plentiful amount of, but that, and then he had some Black Patent. And so, but he took that, and you would imagine it really, akin to the stout, it was about as base malt as you can get for that. And so he did that, a bit of sugar, and then added a bit more beer to it. And so, not everybody has malt on hand. So, but usually, much darker beers. And definitely do the glaze a few ways.
So I'll give you an informal Guinness steak recipe. Take a simple steak, like a little, let's do a ribeye, because a ribeye is easy to cook. Get a hot pan. A little oil in it, get brown the steak on one side. When you flip it, throw in some chopped onions, let them get a little golden. When the steak's just about done, take that out, add in a little bit of Guinness or other stout. What's a good Southampton beer to cook with?
To cook with for a steak? Imperial Porter, definitely.
Imperial Porter, a little bit of Imperial Porter, maybe a half cup. Let that reduce a little bit, add in some butter, even a splash of ketchup. Ketchup somehow rounds it out. So you got some porter, ketchup, onions. And
maybe a little bit of hot sauce.
No, it's us too, if you want.
All right, yeah.
And
I like to live dangerously.
Put the steak back in and toss it, and you've got a little nice steak.
I got another idea. I'm thinking about a grill, not a pan. I'm talking about like a charcoal grill.
Yeah,
you get your porterhouse steak. You throw it on there. You get your Guinness or your Imperial Porter. Pour it in a glass, in a really tall glass.
Mm-hmm.
And then while your steak's cooking, you drink the beer.
I like where this is going. Yeah,
yeah.
Keep going.
And so then you leave it on the grill for about 4 minutes. Then you turn it. And then you leave that for 4 minutes, and you flip it over, 4 more minutes, and turn it, 4 more minutes, and then done. Then pour yourself another Imperial Porter,
yes. Smart move, yep.
And enjoy the steak with there the beer.
Well, I would say, actually, as you turn it, splash some of that beer on the steak. That'll help it, too. Well, all right, we got to wrap this show up.
Then bring three bottles.
The next show is going to be about drinking and cooking.
That's easy to do, yeah.
Yeah,
simple.
That's why I like to cook. I like to drink. So this has been the Good Beer Seal sponsored Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. We have a couple upcoming events. Tuesday, May 4th, Bar Great Harry, the Left Hand Brewery Night. Tuesday, May 4th, the $10 tastings at Jimmy's Number 43. That's tonight. Strong Beer Night with American Beer. We have Lila Now and some special Avery brews. Tomorrow, Wednesday, Blind Tiger Ale House, the Rogue Pacific Northwest Beer and Oyster Festival. Self-explanatory, beer and oysters. Thursday, May 8th at the Diamond in Brooklyn, Diamond Fundraiser 13, benefiting the Bushwick Inlet Park. And Monday, Liquids of Interest at DBA, and this coming weekend, Friday through Sunday, May 7th through 9th, DBA Brooklyn's second annual Williamsburg Cast Fest, hosted by Alex Hall. There'll be 15 casts from around the world. So thank you so much. Good Beer Seal at goodbeerseal.com is our sponsor. In closing, thank you for Beer Sessions Radio, Heritage Radio Network, executive producer Jimmy Carboni, producers Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, engineer Nat Wiener. Have a good night. We will see you next week, Tuesday, 5 p.m. Thank you.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and sometimes...